to Between the Worlds. I'm your host, Amanda Yates Garcia. This season, we focus on the suit of pentacles, all about abundance, the earth, eroticism, and the underworld. Stay tuned and learn how to re-enchant your world with tarot, magic, and more. Listeners, guess what? It's almost time for another Between the Worlds workshop, and this time it's on the delicious Pentacles season theme of abundance. We live on an abundant planet. We live in an abundant universe, but remembering that can be a challenge in a culture that's modeled on scarcity. Even if we're managing to make ends meet financially, if we're tired, stressed, creatively depleted, or if we're uncertain about the future or where our resources are coming from, we just don't feel abundant, no matter how much we might tell ourselves to feel grateful. But true abundance includes rest, it includes love, it includes nourishment, inspiration, security, pleasure. In the natural world, abundance comes through the flow of energy through the biosphere into our bodies and back into the world again. Abundance is flow. While taking this workshop will not instantly place $1 million in your bank account, it will lay the groundwork for a new and nourishing relationship to abundance in your life. In this workshop, we'll be establishing a new relationship to abundance, inspired by the natural systems of the earth and the wisdom tradition of the tarot. We hope you can join us. This Ace of Pentacles live call workshop happens on October 3rd at 11 a.m. PST, but if you can't be there for the live call, you'll get a download later on. And the workshop itself is currently on sale for $66, but the price goes up 20% on September 6th, so you'll probably want to grab your spot right now. And remember, subscribers to our coven at the Jupiter level get this workshop and all future workshops with the cost of membership. So join us. Links in the show notes. Dear listeners, we're so excited to dive with you into this episode with one of our favorite and very dear guests, Chiron Armand. Chiron is a shamanic practitioner holding initiations in Haitian voodoo, Brazilian Kimbanda, and is trained in hoodoo root work in the Southern Conjure tradition. He's also the author of Deliverance, Hoodoo Spells of Uncrossing, Healing, and Protection, which I love, and Clearing Spaces, Inspirational Techniques to Heal Your Home. And he holds an MA in Performance Studies from New York University and a BA in Ritual Anthropology and Queer Studies from Hampshire College. In short, Chiron is brilliant, thoroughly educated, and initiated, and is also kind and adorable and super fun to talk to. We love him so much, and we know that you will too. Today, we're talking about the spirits of the land and the spirits of places. We talk about ancestral relationships to the land and how they show up in your childhood. We talk about techniques for communicating and forming bonds with the spirits of the land and how to do that even if you're living in a big city where you feel like any land spirits may be long gone. We also discuss how the ocean can heal our relationships and how the mountains can lead us to deeper integrity and purpose, but that we can't just approach them in an extractive way, wanting something. Instead, we need to approach the spirits of the land with an attitude of romantic reverence. Stay tuned to find out how. Yay! So Chiron, I am so excited to have you back on the show again. Your presence truly delights me. Secretly, I'm hoping that we'll get you to sing again. That really, like, I think about that all the time, and I just, like, cherish that moment so much.
Oh, thank you. Thank you for having me again. It's really great to see you.
So, well, one of the reasons why we invited you on, aside from the fact that we always just want to find excuses to talk to you, is that this season we're doing Pentacles. It's all about Pentacles, all about Earth. And we saw that you were doing the Spirits of Place class. And we thought, oh my gosh, we have to get Chiron on to, you know, wax poetic about this.
You know, we're connected to so many things by so many routes. We're connected to the land by so many routes through the, you know, subconscious, emotional, inner child, through, you know, ancestral longings and yearnings and pains and triumphs and debts. And, you know, then there's just the, like, you know, the contemporary, like, I don't know, I just want to, like, be there, or I feel like I have a past life connection there, or my job sent me there. There's so many strings that lead to so many places. And I know that I, as, you know, as a, I now say, former international vagabond, have tickled many of the strings that lead me to places, that have led me to places and deep connections. You know, I have a lot there, but it's also been interesting seeing folks with perhaps significantly less, you know, mobility than myself, meaning they just haven't been strewn across the world by the fates, watching them navigate through this class some of their own stuff around home and land and some of the tricky stuff that's come up from there. There have been, you know, lifelong deity connections that suddenly make sense, that, you know, I didn't know this deity was in my life, but obviously that's why I'm always rusting in the Yucatan Peninsula, you know, say if one person, or, you know, like, why am I, you know, Chiron, you're telling us to make these land offerings, why am I always being encouraged to make, you know, make milk offerings? And I'm like, well, talk about, you know, some Celtic stuff, and then that person who's, you know, engaging trance begins to realize, oh wow, I have some fey connections, you know, all of these strings that lead us to place and then back to self. And it's been a wild ride in intimacy.
Yes, I love that working with the land, working with spirits of place, is so truly about intimacy. You live in Brazil now, but are you from the States?
I am. I'm born and raised in Far Rockaway, Queens, New York, and then Long Island. And then, you know, I've lived, you know, in Manhattan and Brooklyn. I've also lived in the Bay Area a short time, and I've been here and there. Yeah.
Yeah. So you've been around. Well, so what inspired you to create this course?
Yeah, working with spirits of the land, I guess it was on my heart because I've had, you know, some choice experiences regarding land over the years in my client practice that have each time blown me away, because I knew what to do to get to a certain point. And then the way that spirit took over every time just fucking, like, laid me out on my ass. It was just like, this is the thing. And, you know, wherever we're, we use the word land a lot in our witchcraft practices. The land, and we're going back to the land, and we're decolonizing the land, and the witch knows the land and all that. And I was just like, I don't, but yet in all of my reading and, you know, scouring, you know, the web and other people's writings, I don't see succinct places where people say, here's how to cultivate that.
I mean, that's one of the problems with witchcraft in general, is that often we're saying things like shadow work, or work with the land, or call in your spirits, or, like, work with your ancestors, and people are like, okay, but how? Like, what does that mean?
Yeah, a lot of buzzwords. And also, I think a lot of times folks taking for granted, there are witches who have absolutely grown up in one landscape, and through their witchiness and inner child subconscious engagement have great relationships with the land, but they don't necessarily even know why, you know? So if you are someone who is displaced or someone who lives in an urban environment, what does that then mean for you to have relationships with spiritual land? I remember, like, my first book on witchcraft, I was like 19, and I went out and I got, like, Ellen Dugan's book, like, the teen elements for, like, elements of witchcraft for teens.
Very
and it was
cute.
Like, hella fucking cute. And, but she's like, you know, this, like, you know, kind of like Midwestern, you know, Anglo-American woman who was like, so go outside and obviously there's a rhododendron in your front yard. Obviously. You're like, this is like, you're like reading this book, like living in the East Village, you know,
right,
without rhododendrons in my backyard, which I do not have. And I began criticism right alongside of my beginning of witchcraft, just being like, this doesn't seem entirely accessible. Especially as I, you know, it wasn't so much my folk magic practice, but it was when I began to do trance work for others and go to the spirit world with very targeted questions, that I would be shown the land being an issue and have to really investigate, well, how do we resolve this? Or the land would step forward and simply resolve the thing at a level at which I didn't, you know, expect. One of the stories I share in, you know, one of the first classes that I've taught here was that, you know, was my, one of my inspirations was a woman coming to me and her discussing working through some mental health concerns that she also found, you know, somewhat common to herself and her sisters, and she was a poet. And she just felt like there was some underlying issue that was spiritual rather than neurological. And I said, well, you know, I'm willing to journey on that and just see what the spirit world says. And what I had come across was a fairly recent issue of interracial marriage that had taken place in the family lines, but that was very much kept a secret. And the way that the secret kind of festered was leading to a lack of integrity energetically in the ancestral lines. Mm-hmm. And I was able to, I had already known about, you know, how to resolve some ancestral pattern energies, cross over the dead, help them to tell new stories about their lives. And then it was like, well, then what's the medicine that replaces this? And this is healed. And this was really like one of the, I pause here just because the shocker, it was just one of the most beautiful shocks. At that moment, I suddenly knew, in that claircognizant way, I suddenly knew that for hundreds of years, a certain portion of her ancestors had done rituals in the Caucasus Mountains. Hmm. And the Caucasus Mountains were stepping forward now and saying, we will teach you about integrity. We are the medicine for this issue. And it was just like completely caught off guard, because it was like nothing, I had never encountered anything more capital T true in my life than just that your ancestors did tons of rituals with us, to the extent that your ancestors are us, we are your ancestors. What's more, what has more integrity than a mountain? We're here now.
Nothing has more integrity than a mountain.
And it was just like, I was just like shattered. Like I didn't even know, like how do I convey the capital T truth of this? I was like, so go give offerings to mountain now. Mountain is going to finish healing this.
You know, that's so fascinating. And it just rings so true for me. Like for instance, you know, the idea, for instance, when you are working magically, that you need clearing, you need motion. And so you literally need to go to water. You need to experience water. You need to be with water. You need to let it move through you. And like if mountain comes to you, it's literal. It's not like a symbol. You know, it's literal places that are calling you.
It's literal. And the things that, you know, these large forces, especially mountain, ocean, can resolve will blow your fucking mind. I was, you know, a few months ago, I was in my relationship, we hadn't hit like so much a stalemate, but there were just things under the surface that were some big energetic blocks on both sides and in between us. And a friend of mine did a reading and she was like, it's really going to be water that cures this. And I'm like, all right, make some baths and stuff. And she's like, Kai, you guys have to go to the ocean.
Yeah,
to the ocean. And you know, we're really inland and the ocean's like 3 hours away. So I'm like, all right, you know, we booked an Uber, made a day of it. And you know, it's so interesting because we're sitting in the car, we're both feeling these rough patterns, and I think I was like listening, I think it was like crying, listening to like old gospel music I had listened to as a child, just at the place where we were in the relationship and how exhausted I was with certain patterns. And we arrive at the ocean and he was like, oh, I'm not gonna do it. And I'm like, you know what, like that's your responsibility. I know that my side of this, I have to get into the ocean. I know that we have to. You know that we have to, when you're not a fucking dickhead. And you remember that we're both, you know, two people who are medicine people in a relationship, and you gotta be on ass. I eventually get up and like I put on some shorts and I go to the ocean and I make a coin offering and I just start singing and I just start singing and yelling. You gotta just bring yourself, you have to bring everything, you know. That's one of the things I've mostly been teaching in this class, which I didn't expect, is I'm teaching a lot about like how to approach ceremony. Like we approach ceremony by bringing our all, not your all, like your game face or your your smile, your, no, you bring your desperation and your frustration. You know the protocols. You're going to leave the offerings. You're going to sing the songs, but you're also going to be with what the state that you're bringing, the shitty state you're bringing, this I cracked my pants before I got here state. It's a Monday state. Everything sucks state. Oh, you want a song? Here's a song too. And I also need this. You know, your ceremony is it's the audience participation role. I'm going to be both. I'm going to be present to the needs of the ocean, be present to my needs, and we all get so much more out of it from that vulnerability. And what's crazy is we both get to the fucking ocean, and it was like months of crusty brick walledness in our emotional bodies. Just left. We spent the rest of the night sitting on the beach, just like drinking beers and laughing and looking at each other in awe of what the ocean had just done. Because it wasn't, it really, I mean, I'm a medicine person. I know the spells, I know the magic. I can grab a doll and a rock and a, and I'm looking at this vast, and it was just, we just got into the ocean. We just got into the ocean.
Oh my gosh, there's so many strands in what you're saying. So first of all, this idea that you brought up about bringing everything. There's a quote that I like to use with my students from Jericho Brown about poetry. One of the things that he says is that you bring everything to your poems, like every book you've ever read, every breakup you've ever had, like every city you've ever been to, like every, you know, argument, every glance from your mother, like you bring every single one of those to your poems. And I feel like magic is like that. Like we bring our full spirit to the work, and then the work responds to us with its full spirit.
You get so much more out of it. It's vulnerability and truth, you know? And I think that that's where people often who might find themselves, you know, either finding themselves in danger when it comes to magic, you know, either calling in things that they didn't expect to, or, you know, monkey's paw kind of thing, you know, didn't know. It's they weren't being honest with themselves, and being honest with yourself is where I'm at now. Okay, this is where I'm at. And I'm going to bring all of it.
Yeah. Yeah. And like, that's the thing about spirits of the land is that they're big enough to handle your full spirit.
Yes. Yes.
I always feel that way when I go to the desert. Like the desert is so spacious that I feel like I can let my full spirit extend to its farthest lengths there because there's so much space around. And it is really amazing, like the differences in emotional tenor of different places. But so it sounds like you arrived at this work through a kind of gnosis or through your own practice rather than like a lineage, or is it a combination?
Like, no, I with the land stuff, it was, I know how to make an offering. I know that, you know, in the United States, corn and tobacco are very common offerings to the land. You know, libations of water are often accepted by spirits of the land, even deity. You know, if I'm working in more in a Celtic context, milk is, you know, if we're thinking about the British Isles, milk is more common. I knew these basic things. And I also, you know, one of the first things I was ever taught in terms of ceremony and engagement with the spirit world, but I think is especially related to the one end, is, you know, please, I'm sorry, and thank you. Mm. Like, good manners go a long way. You know, these extensions of, you know, element of earth itself. You know, some of my stuff with the land also came from recognizing certain things about myself that were just felt really out of whack. Like, you know, like, why do I have trouble cooking or nourishing myself, or money troubles at certain times in my life? And, you know, certain things coming back to, well, what's my relationship with the earth itself? What's my relationship with my own body? And realizing, okay, that, you know, if I'm having issues with my own, you know, body, perhaps receiving pleasure and also receiving resources and also displacement. Okay, what's going on? Like, is there a mirror here in terms of my relationship with the element of earth or the planet earth itself? And in those folds of investigation, you know, I'm working with other clients and discovering, you know, where they are out of right relationship with the land, or their ancestors are out of right relationship with the land for one reason or another. And learning new ways of engaging and bringing back to my own life, my own practice, well, where are these gaps and missing links for me? And I learned a lot. I learned a lot about some of my own, past life issues that absolutely put me outside of right relationship with the land. Past life issues that, or ancestral issues like you have, in Celtic context, I'm going to butcher this word, but the geiss, G-E-I-S-S, like this is a real thing that some of us are carrying, like sort of broken ancestral taboos. And I would, uncover these pieces, either personal or ancestral, and start applying these, what needs to happen to be in right relationship or to heal or to fix this?
So it was an invitation from the land itself, it sounds like, to come in and do this work.
Yeah, and it was karmic. It was like, kid, you fucked up so fucking hard. And not karmic like punishment. I've come to understand that karma is actually, for me, karma is more like, oh, you love this? You love this so much? You love using this thing unconsciously so much? We'll teach you all about this thing. Mm. We will, I think karma is actually, you love power? You love power so much? Let's teach you all about it.
Right. A kind of love attraction sort of thing. Like, you're thinking about this? Well, let's think about it really hard. We're going to show you all the different ways.
Whether it be emotionally or interrelationally or through land privileges, which I've had in abundance in certain past lives. It's like, we're going to completely strip you of those this time so you can really understand the ins and outs of it. It's not out of punishment. It's balance, and not a coarse balance or a cruel balance. It's you love, we're going to teach you all about it, kid.
Yeah, like in witchcraft, you're working with, you're collaborating, right? So you bring it up, like what you bring up. I think this is really true and important for clients as well, or people who go to see spirit workers, that like what you bring, the question you ask, is what spirit answers. So if your question is like, even subconsciously, about power, then that's how spirit answers you. It answers the questions that you ask. You might wish you were asking different questions, because you probably want different answers sometimes than the ones that you're getting. But so much of the magic that comes our way, or the response, like spirit is responding to us. It's not just coming in directing us, but it's like it's in conversation with us. So it's not just coming in like completely off topic.
Absolutely not. And that's why also it's smart to know when it's the best question to ask is, what's the best question to ask?
Yes. Oh my gosh. Yes. Sometimes that is exactly. They're like, we have been waiting for you to ask that question.
What's the question?
Ah. Okay. Well, so let's go back to the spirits of place. So are spirits of place the same as ancestral spirits? Are spirits of land the same as ancestral spirits?
So I want to go, Kelly Harrell of soulintentarts.com. She's an amazing shamanic practitioner. We were talking a few weeks ago, and one of the ways that she put it, I really like this, was spirits of the land are really, spirits of the land, like the most, sort of immediate descendants of the earth in the most local, area. And we've got large spirits of the land, we've got guardian spirits of the land. I mean, it's not so much something that we were talking about, but from other speakers, teachers I've spoken to, and from my own practice, I would definitely see that there are large forces that might perhaps wash over a certain, aspect of the ecosystem, or, there's the spirit of this river, there's the spirit of this mountain, there's the spirit of this, of this valley, those are large spirits of the land, and then there are perhaps smaller genus loci spirits of nature in that. One thing that that Kelly and I were talking about, and I really recognize this too, was that spirits of the land are often, kind of like, okay, there's a human here, let's do the thing. We're gonna, spirits of the land are holding us down, and I don't mean holding us down like in a bad way, but like a lover. Like, mm-hmm. We're providing food, we're providing, we can provide elements of protection. We're engaged with the human world in such that we know that you're here, and if this is a place that humans are allowed to be, then this is an arrangement. where we start to enter into more complex conversations, especially when it comes to, and we looked at this a little bit in my class, is, well, where do I have a right to be?
Right.
Is, or what's going to recognize me and be nice to me or accept me, is actually more of a spiritual place conversation. It's a spiritual place that might say, you don't look like the humans I'm used to, and you're not carrying yourself with the codes and morality or ceremonial ways that the delicate ecosystem is demanding. Now we have a problem. You know, now we're talking about issues that are more, you know, political, and I think what's, you know, really on the surface. This is not for all spirits of the place, spiritual place, but it does come up. And I think when it comes to ancestors or like landcestors, it's because, you know, for I think many indigenous peoples around the world, there is a sort of pact that when you die, you will become the land. Okay. And, you know, I absolutely have, you know, journeys where I go in and I'm aware that the ancestor that's in front of me is not just an ancestor, but is the land. It's like the land in human form. And those are some of the like most potent ancestors I might engage with. And sometimes it's a problem if the ancestor themselves is not healthy. This can also happen. We cannot idolize traditional cultures and say that, you know, everything's perfect. There's a lot of it. I've come across a lot. I'm reminded of my altar room in Brooklyn many years ago. And I would go into journey and I would see that there was an indigenous woman kneeling at the feet of my Santa Muerte altar. And I was like, what's going on? And I would like try to get rid of her. And like, why are my protection wards not working? And like, not that I'm just, you know, just like, not that because she was, I didn't know who she was. And I'm like, I just kind of need my space. And I finally leaned in and I was like, what's she praying for? Why Santa Muerte? And I realized that it was, she recognized that this was a deaf spirit. And she was praying for the end of Western civilization. And yeah, and it was like, what's when? I couldn't get rid of her in the way that I was trying to, because she was a land ancestor. She was the land itself, yeah, having risen up two or three floors into my office, demanding this. And when I finally was able to fill out the story, you know, she had been alive during the early 1600s, when colonists had forced her and her tribe to move like eastward onto Long Island, and there was, you know, she lost her baby, and it was still a lot of grief. What I didn't know at that time, which I know now, is that the way that I have addressed that would have been calling in a healthy ancestor to come and tend her, because that's actually how we, one of the ways that we can bring healing to land that is unhealthy, is you're calling in who can be accountable here, who is older and healthier and can tend to the wounds of this smaller, younger being that is, you know, in pain and leaving everything else to be out of right relationship. It's who do we call on? So I was definitely at my wit's end trying to understand that circumstance, because no one had ever prepared me for that. But yeah, you know, when it comes to, we've got land, we've got ancestors that are, you know, in being the land, they're receiving as well the offerings and homage that are given to the land. And then on top of that, / intertwined with that, are spirits of place that are more marked by human interaction with them, more marked by the meanings and travails that we have attached to them, the imprints we have left in these spaces over time, and how those spaces have come back and spoken to us.
So do you feel like there's a difference, or what are the differences between spirits of land and place that are in wild or natural settings, or like versus spirits of place in cities or even suburbs or like mini malls or parking lots?
I think that probably spirits of place in natural settings, probably if they are not well and do not serve life, probably have a better chance of coming into right relationship or balance out in the wild, where not everything has been like utterly erased, where we have these spirits of place here in urban environments where there's nothing to lean on. There's nothing, where does this spirit of place, if it's not healthy, find its balance again? Where does it relearn how to be well? Then I think we start having some kinds of issues, you know? But, you know, even aside from that, you know, I'm always, and not always, I'm often thinking from a shamanic perspective of what's well and what's not. From a more sorcerer's perspective, it's what's going to work for me toward this intention and what's not. And I mean, from a sorcerer's perspective, it's a little more interesting in a way, you know, dirt from this part of Chinatown where multiple killings have happened absolutely could be effective if I'm doing some violence work or, you know, or engaging with a certain kind of restless dead, you know, in that delineation, it becomes less about the land and is this supporting life? I guess one of the most potent spirits of place, aside from like, you know, cities and, you know, the energy of cities, big, big ideas, cities, deserts, ocean, mountains, spirits of land and spirits of place. One of the more microcosmic spirits of place experiences I had was many years ago. I just left a relationship and really energetically drained, and my roommate was as well. And we were in straits. We were really like under extreme energetic duress as we were leaving Brooklyn. And I remember I called my friend and colleague, Caitlin Foisey. And I was like, you know, we're kind of, you know, we're moving out. We don't really have great means right now. Where do we go? And she said, you need to go to the Irish Pub Inn.
That's so specific.
It was so specific. And Caitlin Foisey is a powerhouse when it comes to spirits of place, her relationship to time and old hotels and fascinating. And she said, you need to go to the Irish Pub Inn in New Jersey. And I was like, what?
like, that is not what I was expecting. Not what I was expecting
at all. And she was like, she said to me, you know, when I have experienced energetic duress at times, that place has really held me and really protected me. And I remember we were just like, okay. And I like plugged in the website. You know, website is like old and like, you know, kind of like not.
like 90, early 2000s.
Yeah, like, you're like, no, we're not taking any credit cards. Like, it's a show up as you are, kind of a. And we drive out there. We, you know, hop in my friend's car. We drive out there, and it was interesting. I think that the fact that this place was going to provide a buffer and shelter energetically and emotionally was evident. That the fact that we like pulled up and we sat on the porch, which was just covered in stuff. I mean, just like piano. It was like a place that had truly collected people's belongings and memories and that sort of Atlantic, not Atlantic City, shiny Atlantic City, but like the people's Atlantic City, you know, in that New York shore. Wait, for decades, it had collected people's stuff and memories and good times and warmth and people's will. It had collected people's willingness to be in right relationship with it through their objects. So as we approached it, it was this energy of, even though the surrounding area was really wily, it was this simple little energetic fortress in the middle of it. And we sat on the porch and we just cried and cried, and we went inside, and it was probably like the first peace we'd felt in months. And it really was this shelter, and like it had like a little diner. It was like a world away from everything else, and it was the way in which it had, you know, like the menu in the diner was full of old newspaper articles about baseball games, like going back to like the 30s and the 40s. It was the way in which it used time and New York and New Jersey culture and artifacts from there as a buffer that really did make it this safe place. It was like, wow, I was desperately in need of a spirit of place that could hold me. And it really did that.
I sometimes think of spirits of place, especially when they happen in cities, as, you know, all the stories, all the experiences of all the people that have lived in a city, like they make up their own egregore, right? So yes. There's like, cities have spirits and we're all part of that spirit. We're all, you know, creating that spirit together. And then there's like pockets within that, in the same way that maybe you feel more comfortable when you're at a certain family member's house than another family member's house, or, you know, it's the energy that's put into it. I mean, For me, sometimes when I'm working with spirits of place and land, I just have so much climate grief. Like, I have so much grief for our planet. And I think a lot of people, when they're tapping into the ancestral spirits of the land, it can just be so overwhelming. I mean, they are infinitely powerful, of course, but they are also like in such turmoil right now. Like, what are your thoughts about that? That grief over what we're doing to the planet, and how do you feel like the spirits of land and place want us to work with them in relation to that?
I always think to myself, you know, when we think about we're killing the earth, we're not killing the earth. She's gonna be fine. We're in a bit of a fever, but she's gonna be fine. You know, I think I get saddened because there are places that I want to see and visit that might not exist, or they're just changing radically and becoming inhospitable to life. I almost feel like we're like on the lowest rung of priorities in a way when it comes to nature, because we've got spiritual land, we have the spirits of nature, we have the, you know, ecosystems that are dying out. We're the ones who we can force our way, you know, we can force our existence in certain areas. And we, with our pleasure seductions and privileges and sense of rights, might appear to be the most grieved, but we're not the most begrieved. We're not the ones who are losing the most.
No, but it's just like certainly not me, who's like occupies a position of great privilege in our culture or in our planet, but just I think, well, for me, what grief is love, right? So I just love whales. I love forests. I love worms. I love possums. And sometimes I just feel like my body can't hold or contain all the grief that I feel watching them die. Like, I just sometimes can't bear it. And I know that, like, of course, ultimately the earth will regenerate and everything, but I'm like, but I care about this possum. I don't want this forest to die. Like, I don't want this whale to die. Maybe in the future there'll be new species, but yeah, selfishly, I don't care. I guess I just want these ones to stay.
I'm reminded of an episode of the podcast Why Shamanism Now, where Christina Pratt is talking about being in New York right after the towers fell. And she like is trying to help people cross over and journey like from her apartment every day. She's doing what she can on a shamanic level to bring some help. And one of the journeys she goes into, this big spider just walks right across her journey and looks at her and says, "Look what you did." And it was a profound moment for her of like recognizing like how the spirit world sees us. Like, you know, it was true. Like, I don't look at every ant and just say, "Oh, look, that's Charles," and I separate him from what other ants do. No, you're an ant. You do what ants do. You do what ants have done. You know, there is culpability. I'm angry because I feel like our greatest culpability is in the power we have given away to these mega corporations.
Yeah.
I keep feeling like if I were to have my own like academic field, it would be called collusion studies.
Yes.
Collusion studies. I put that out there. If anyone needs to, yeah, let's have, like do like a collusion studies journal. Because that it's in the collusion that the change really happens, or that all the power gets lost. It's always about the collusion.
I'm thinking about Hannah Arendt, who wrote about Eichmann and Germany, like, and isn't the banality of evil. And I think she would be one of your grandmothers of collusion studies, would be like, why do people participate in this?
Why do we participate?
Like, you know,
that we just give over.
Yeah. But I'm wondering about, you know, with spirits of place, like, and land, what are some rituals that we can do, or some like really practical things that we can do to engage with the spirits of the land and work with them? I feel like I wonder in terms of collusion studies, if one of the reasons we are willing to collude is because we've lost that connection.
I believe so, because I think that what leads to collusion most is, I mean, spying. Like, whether or not you've got the spying for it, you know?
Yes, and like, one of the things that really confuses me is, like, I just love the land. Like, I love the forest, and I've had conversations with folks who, you know, are justifying, like, cutting the forest down or whatever, and I'm like, how can you not see? How can you not see that there is spirit here? How can you not see the sacredness of this? And they just don't. Like, they're like, you are a crazy, bleeding heart, liberal environmentalist, like, and you are an irrational person. But it's like when you watch it, like, imagining somebody just killing another person and just not recognizing that as wrong. And I think that it's because they're so alienated. Like, they're so alien.
For you, it's twofold. I think it's that you actually do love the land. And I also think it's because you know yourself. And that knowing yourself is a backbone so that when collusion comes up, you don't find yourself just falling into the nearest, easiest idea. But your backbone is right there to support you in your conviction.
And maybe trees and mountains help us. Have
absolutely
that kind of background.
It's an extension of that backbone. It's an extension of self. We are the land, just mobile,
right?
We're just the land on legs.
But so how, what are some rituals that you might advocate for, like, connecting to these spirits of the land that could help us, I guess, what's the opposite of alienation, like, relationality, community, like, connectedness,
remembrance,
like, what specifically do we do?
Well, I feel like there's the general and then there's the more custom specific. In general, there is a beautiful rite by Scott Cunningham. It's in his book, like Elements of the Earth. It's in my book. I publish it in my book, Clearing Spaces, and it's a rite for the earth. And it's just this beautiful poem where you just literally just place your hands on the earth and you're just imagining the earth well, and you're imagining local environments well, and visualizing and sending that goodwill of wellness into everything, which is beautiful. And I think that that makes a difference in terms of one's personal rapport with local spiritual land. I think that what's also required, so from a general standpoint, there's that, there's offerings, there's visiting nature in general, which for some of us that's a trip, you know, like out of an urban environment to go visit nature. And I think one of the other things that I think this land class has been teaching me is that there are personal relationships to the land, even if you don't think that they are, but they just have to be tracked down. And once we bring in that personal conviction and that personal relationality, then the whole, like the tables turn completely. I remember, you know, one of the things that we've done in the class is everyone has an earth shrine that we're tending, and we're leaving offerings, and we're listening, and we're asking to be in right relationship with the element of earth and the planet earth. And one of the exercises that we were given to do was to map out, do some writing about, as a child, how did you see your family interacting with the landscape? How did you see your family interact with the land? I'm like, okay, you know, I'll do that. Like, I, you know, sounds like an, you know, interesting exercise. It blew my mind. It blew my mind to think to myself, like, I'm 7 years old, I'm Far Rockaway, Queens, urban environment. How did my mom interact with the local environment? Well, she was a single, you know, until I was five, she was a single mom who was often, you know, looking for resources for us. You know, whether that be going to local friends' houses or local family members' houses, or the welfare office, you know, there was a sort of resource hunting to support us. And also these times, I remember very potently, only because I wrote, you know, this exercise, where she'd bring like a loaf of bread and feed the bird behind the apartment building. Mm-hmm. And my father had a totally different relationship with the land, because he was gone for the first few years of my life, doing sort of nefarious inner city things before coming back, and then being a good father. But through that, my own relationship with the land was kind of obscured through things he didn't want me to engage with, the people he didn't want me to meet. And all of this was taking place on the shore of Far Rockaway, Queens. And to see this, to see my lack of access, 8-9-year-old self, what my access to the land and my environment, how it had been mediated through these two beings, totally put Far Rockaway Queens and my relationship with it as a child into a completely different context. And I combined that with some of the dreams I had as a child, which I realized were the land saying, we just supported you in being here, medicine person. Here are some of our ails. And I have a whole new perspective now on what the land is. It's not just a general goodwill charity thing. Yeah, we should support that, throw some coins at it. Now I see my personal investment in it. I see the places at which I was kept from it. I see the responsibility that was expected of me in relation to it. I see some of the resources that were available to me. In my spiritual cleansing and protection masterclass with Caitlin Foisey, she was talking about some of the herbs that grew up in her area of Massachusetts and her seeing those as some of her power plants. And I'm like, what? What? And I'm like, Far Rockaway Queens, what were power plants? And I like, literally looked up, I was like, botany, Far Rockaway Queens. And it's talking about these beach grasses that are hardy and resilient and that like make way for like provide homes for like this kind of bird and this kind of butterfly. And I'm like, these are mine. These are, as like, because I was a witch, as a shamanic priest, these are my, these plants are have been waiting for me to work with for my whole life.
And they've just been there.
Been there.
Nothing has been hidden, right?
Yeah, except the ways in which I was abstracted from the land. Yeah. And my personal investment is far more personal now. It's far more personal and far more direct to the extent that I'm like looking up like, so what new development is happening in that area of the world now? Like I'm personally invested in my home borough in a way that I never was before. And it's frustrating that we have to like so much of that kind of digging has to happen to arrive at something less than a generic gift to the land if one does not already have that impulse in them.
Well, as you're saying all this, something that's coming up for me is just going back to this idea of relationality and connection. And like, even though people who might be listening to this might be like, okay, I want to relate to the spirits of the land, but I don't know how. And then you're saying, well, we give offerings, we pay attention, you know, we learn about the land, we reflect on our relationship with it and how we've been having this relationship. We reflect on our ancestral relationship, like literally, like how did your parents relate to the land? What were they doing on it? And I am thinking, you know, we do know how to relate to things. For instance, with our partners, are we relating if we're like sitting on the couch scrolling on our phone? You know, like we can walk through a landscape. We can be near a tree and not relating to it because we're, you know, reading a book, drinking coffee, sending a text message. But we also know how to relate. Like, you know, for instance, if we were going to relate to our partner, we don't really need to have, you know, call in by the 12 names of the angel, like, and, you know, have all the sigils and all that. Like we can make them dinner, right? Like we can,
sure, yes.
We can learn what they care about, you know, we can, and then bring it to them, you know? So for instance, like if we're working with the spirits of the land, it doesn't have to be this arcane ceremonial magic that is so complicated and that feels alienating that we don't know the songs and the dances. Like if you don't know the song, you know, sing Smells Like Teen Spirit. To the sing tree. You know what? Like, you have a song. Yeah. Sing what you've got.
that is something that I've also been teaching. I've found myself unexpectedly sharing a lot of spirit songs in the class as well, just because I'm privileged in the fact that I'm working with a group of people who are wanting this engagement and wanting to cultivate this intimacy, both with local land and land from childhood and with land and the earth in general, in order to be able to position themselves to heal personal and ancestral issues with the land. I actually did upload like a Dropbox of, hey guys, here are songs I turn to when I am in devotional practice with a spirit or one of the directions or the elements. As you were talking, I was thinking about the energy of yin and like the slowing down that is, you know, again, I'm working with a group of folks who are putting the time and energy and attention into that slowing down, and they are reaping such benefits. I mean, it's already, you know, for nearly everyone in the class, it's rippled out into new animal helping spirits in their lives, plant helping spirits, recognition of, you know, like healing of childhood wounds just through that connection. So much is happening. The tech is there. And I guess, you know, what I'm thinking about for everyone else, for everyone who needs to be on board, but this is not their first impulse, making this right relationality a priority isn't yet on their heart. My brain goes to, maybe it's that those of us who do have this on our hearts and do have this remembrance and do have these ceremonial skills and have cultivated these relationships, maybe it is about reaching a critical mass point where we, like our ancestors of old, take that land energy confidently backing us up, and we go to these towers and these megaliths that the powers that be have created that are committed to abstracting us, and we tear them down. Do we have another choice, really, is the question. I don't know if we have another choice.
I don't think we have another choice. I think that we have to work to dismantle them. And if we don't, we do it at our own peril. But I think also that we have all these allies in the land and in the spirits of the land that are there and are actually trying to communicate with us all the time and are receptive to our communication with them. Like, I was driving yesterday and I saw these weeds. I don't know their names. I want to go meet them and learn about them. And I've noticed them so many times. Like, I've seen them around, but I haven't really stopped to think. You know, I've been on my phone or whatever, like driving my car. And these weeds always appear at like roadside construction sites or where they're like building an on-ramp to the freeway. And I was like, these plants are regenerating the soil, and they're going into these ugly, alienated, destroyed, poison, toxic landscapes. I'm like, who are these warriors? Like, who? What plant is this that finds itself in these defiled places and starts regenerating them that can survive there? And I feel like that plant is a plant that I want to be working with, studying with, honoring, celebrating, because I feel like it can teach me how to regenerate the defiled parts of my own heart. And also, it's doing this amazing work of regenerating the world just very humbly and kind of anonymously, like there on the side of the road.
But so dutifully.
So dutifully, like he's always showing up, you know, like wherever there's this disrupted land, there this plant is. And I just want to salute and give some offerings to this fair genius out there, you know?
Yeah, that's another form of intimacy that I've been trying to share. You know, so much of what we're doing isn't coming from, you know, we've just learned, of, you know, this from a book or that from a book or learn from a teacher, but we've learned to say, you're interesting. Ooh, I like you. I love you. Here's an offering. I'm feeling to give an offer. I'm feeling the impulse to give an offering in this direction. My students have been learning about, you know, like the calling of the seven directions and stopping at the West and the West saying, you know what? I'm going to help you a lot. Sing me a song.
Yeah.
Just throw something in my direction, because the reciprocity is going to be right there. It's going to be immediate. And even in your haze, even in your teary-eyedness, bring that song that you love to me so that I can bring even more to you. I was sitting with mugwort the other day, which I'm trying to, which I'm cultivating a stronger relationship with based on my own, you know, European ancestral background as a fumigatory plant. I do have, you know, relations with other fumigatory plants, but mugwort was not one of my first ones, and I wish it had been, especially because of my Norse connections. And, you know, mugwort was always taught to me as, like, you know, somewhat psychotropic and great for witchiness. But I'm like, you know, let's talk mugwort. What are you about? Here you are. You're everywhere. You're in practically every city and town, growing wild. You know, we're almost taught to believe that which exorcises and cleanses are these rarer things. When you're everywhere, you have no problem being everywhere, and you're saying, I'm going to clean up your mess.
Right? Like, what a generous plant.
What a generous plant to be everywhere and clean up. exactly the perspective I had. I was just like, who do you think you are being so cool? And and Mugwort was, you know, it was connecting its perspective on cleansing to its perspective on seeing, you know, seeing that which is in the shadows and seeing that which is in the dark. And sure, why should I be scarce? Why should we not have abundance of medicine for seeing in the dark? Why should we not have that? Just, it was like, I better, just like, I'm going to help you see stuff you wouldn't usually see. I see stuff you're not usually going to see, and I will attract it toward me and help you get rid of it.
And isn't it easier, like, a plant that's everywhere can see a lot more, right?
Yeah.
It's there to see it. It's everywhere.
I would like for you to practice driving safety, but I would like to see a picture of this plant.
I will. I mean, they're everywhere. So I have this plant app that you can take a picture of it and it tells you what it is. I want to learn its name. And I wanted to ask you about that too, like in terms of spirits of place, spirits of the land, like in your relationships with them, like, do you feel like they have names or how do you call them? Like, especially, you know, one of the challenges is like this plant, for instance, I could learn its Latin name, but I would also love to learn the Tongva name or the Keech name or the Chumash name for whatever this plant is, if it is in fact an indigenous plant. And in terms of like spirits of places or spirits of the land, spirits of the glades, spirits of the river, do you work with naming at all? Or like, how do you relate to them as far as like beings with names?
It's a really good question. I feel like I've stumbled across this a little bit. I find myself just like naming all the names of something when I start to know them. Like, you know, if I'm talking to someone about, you know, violet, telling you should work with violet plant because it's going to be good for the heart, I can't leave out the fact that it's also called heartsease. It's also called pansy. It's like I just find all of its names falling from my lips because they all illuminate the contours of why it's such a good medicine, like before, you know, in their own way. So I'm like, you know, go get some violet, also known as heartsease, also known as pansy. And not because I'm trying to be specific, but each of these is illuminating some aspect of why it's beautiful medicine. Another place that happens in my mouth, cinquefoil, the plant cinquefoil. In hoodoo, it's known as five-finger grass. And if I go to Home Depot, they're like five-finger grass. Now I'm looking for cinquefoil. Why is it called five-finger grass? Because it looks like it has five fingers. And from that sort of doctrine of signatures, it's also good for all the things that five fingers do. It's great for dexterity. It's great for attracting, holding on to things, mastery, all of these kinds of things. So I tend to wax like ad nauseum on the names of something when I know it, just because I feel like in doing that, I'm celebrating the plant or the place in the ways that the people have known it over time. And I also feel like if I'm using all of the names of something, that's a lot of respect.
Yeah, I mean, I think of what you're saying in relation both to like conjuration of an herb or conjuration of a plant or even a spirit of a place. And then it's also reminding me of like the medieval practice with royalty to be like, you know, hail King Charles, like the first of his name, who is like the leader of the free world and mother of dragons, yes, or whatever, yes. Like that you're saying like all the different things about them. But I also feel like one of the ways that we work with herbs or work with plants or work with places is to introduce ourselves, to say like, I am Amanda and you are, for instance, Mugwort, and you clear away ghosts, and you have fuzzy leaves, and you smell very herbal and grounding, and you invite second sight, and you are ubiquitous throughout the land, like you of all places, you of all continents, you like herb of my ancestors. Like, you're telling it how you want to relate to it. It's kind of like you're explaining your love language to this plant, and then it can respond to you.
Absolutely. And I've also, I have a strong sensitivity to when I feel like I am using an herb and I've crossed the line from working with to like, now I have to get back to, now I have to get down to business. Now we have something going here. I need to hold up my end of the bargain. If I'm turning to you and pulling you out of a jar on the regular, then I need to be pulling something out of myself on the regular too. What does that look like between us? And that's usually the point at which a song starts to happen.
Yes.
It's usually the point at which words start flowing because I'm choosing, you're being intimate with me. Who knows? I mean, I think we really take this shit for granted. Like, maybe you're going to throw that mugwort on a charcoal and the mugwort's going to be like, I don't give a fuck no more. Like, get rid of your
own. Yeah, like, what are you doing for me? Like, you're just like...
We really take this shit for granted.
Yeah, we do. We do.
You know, and I'm never going to reach that point. I'm going to stay aware and I'm going to, you know, reach into my own pot. And as I'm, you know, you're beginning with mugwort and I'm thinking about the first time I was with a Northern European shamanic practitioner who fumigated with mugwort. That was my introduction to the idea of fumigating with mugwort. I'm thinking about my Norse practice. I'm thinking about my ancestors. I'm thinking about, you know, the ubiquity. And I just found, you know, those words coming to the surface. And it was like, okay, I'm following this. And the words weren't pretty. It was simple. But it was, you're giving to me. And in the same moment, I'm going to be giving to you.
Exactly. You know, ultimately what we're saying here is that working with spirits of place is about relationship, and that as we cultivate our relationships through song, through presence, through knowledge, through naming, through sensitivity, through listening, that that is what establishes our relationship to spirits of place, and that also by doing that, that the spirits of place generously confer upon us or help us cultivate within ourselves the strengths that they themselves have as spirits. So for instance, like the mountain spirit helps us cultivate our own inner power and integrity if we participate with them, like if we interrelation with them. But the relationship is not just give me some of your integrity. It's like,
yes.
You, and it can't even be like the integrity that you get from working with the mountain spirit comes through your relationship of work, like showing up. And we, before we got on the line today, we're talking about how it's about your daily practice and like you know to do the songs and what songs to use because you show up every day. And if you just show up once a week or once a month, even though, yeah, sure, that's more practical and we're all really busy, but then it doesn't have the time to tell you. Like it can't help you in the same way that like, yeah, you could have a friend that you see like once every 3 years, like when you're passing through New York or whatever. But if you're not in contact with that person, you're not going to be privileged to receive whatever wisdom they have to offer you. It's just not possible.
And something that I stress is, being human is being spongy. That's just a part of being human. Being human is being spongy. So we have words like inspiration, influence. We have stuff coming in. It's just a part of being human. And the part of being wise is, so I'm going to discerningly tend what is coming in. And that's not just turning everything off, but I'm going to firmly and actively cultivate what's coming in. I want this to influence me more than that.
Making choices about what influences you and how it influences you.
Yeah. I'm going to really cultivate this as an influence. Working at my bovada with my ancestors. Working with the seven directions. I want that container for myself that always says, I am here. So that's why we call in the seven directions. To say so that the universe and parts of ourselves that resonate with these directions and elements say, yes, you are here, rather than this culture that says, no, you're not here, you're nothing, by my deodorant.
Yeah, exactly. The only way that you will feel like you are, that you exist, is if, you know, I buy deodorant, therefore I exist.
Exactly, you know? And that's now you're poised to make change.
Chiron, I wonder if you would be willing to sing a song for the spirits of the land that are here holding us now, as a closing for our work together today.
My voice is a little raspy, so forgive me. I just leaned into my own Earth Shrine. You know, the working with the spirits of the land class that I've been teaching comes to a close this week. I'm sure I will be ceremonially dismantling it within a week or so. But I sort of leaned in that direction. And I sort of asked what would be a supportive song to sing, and it's one that I wrote. at a time when I needed to make a big leap in my own relationship with the land. And I was told by the land, by the earth, will write me a song. This will not be the greatest performance thereof, but it'll at least have the lyrics. Mother's got the medicine. Mother's got the medicine. Whoa. Whoa. Mother's got the medicine. Mother's got the medicine. Whoa. Whoa. So when I feel afraid, I know that I've been made lovingly, lovingly. And when I feel despair, I know that she is there holding me, holding me. Mother's got the medicine. Mother's got that medicine. Whoa, whoa. Mother's got the medicine. Mother's got the medicine. Whoa, whoa. So when I feel afraid, I know that I've been made lovingly, lovingly. And when I feel despair, I know that she is there holding me.
That song just healed my heart. That's so beautiful. Yay. It's what an honor to hear that song sung and to sing that song to the earth. What a blessing. Thank you so much. It's been such a pleasure to have you here. I'm so grateful. I'd love to send our listeners your way because I know that will you be holding this class again?
Probably soon. Once I recover from how potent it's been, I'm still catching up on some of the homeworks. If I hold it again, probably towards winter or spring again. I do have a Love Magic master class happening right now, and I do have probably coming up in another couple of months spiritual cleansing and protection master class, but the land one will probably happen maybe winter or spring.
Well, so where can people find out more about these classes?
You can, my website is impactshamanism.com. I'm kind of a little more active on Instagram at Chiron Armand and Twitter at Chiron Armand.
Yay! Go find them, people. Thanks for being here, Chiron.
Thank you so much for having me.
This podcast is made possible by listeners like you. Subscribers to our Weird Circle at the Jupiter level get workshops, community, bonus content, and magical support throughout the year. We really do hope that you join us. In the meantime, if you love our content and want to keep us on the air, please do take a moment to give us 5 stars or leave us a sweet review on iTunes or share your favorite moments from the podcast on social media. Truly, all of it makes a huge difference to us. You can tag me at Oracle Valet or at Between the Worlds Podcast. Not only does your support help keep us on the air, it helps baby witches who really need this content know how to find their way to us between the worlds. So thank you for being here, and thank you for helping other people find their way here as well. This podcast is hosted by Amanda Yates Garcia and produced by Carolyn Pennypacker Ricks. Our icon was created by Maria Minnis, aka Tiny Parsnip, and our graphic design is by Leah Hayes. Thanks for flying with us.